Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and it's Monday, and we're thrilled that you're here. Give us a call. Give us a text, 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
We made it. I did not put my shovels away, as Steve Bertrand mentioned, because I knew this was going to happen. We just talked about this last week, too.
I think for any of us to assume that we would get all through the winter, all through the year, without any kind of measurable snow was ridiculous. So there it is, a little bit of snow, nothing scary. I do have to compliment Chicago drivers. Normally, if you go a week or 10 days without any snow in the city, everybody forgets how to drive in snow. I didn't have a hard time at all getting to work today, did you? It was business as usual.
That's because we were forewarned from 3 to 25 inches,
right.
And I think out near us we got about an inch and a half.
Yeah, it was easy for me when you never go more than 3 miles an hour over 2 hours.
Sure.
It's well,
very
sad.
Hard of the time, yeah. Steve, did you?
It was pretty slow today.
Well, it got cleared up by the time we hit the roads.
Yeah. Happy for you.
So thanks for, you know, being the, what do they call that?
Trailblazer. Yeah.
I like how you both went different ways on that.
Dave Bennett is in studio with us. Here's why. Northwestern University, located in nearby Evanston, is celebrating something that they have never achieved once before in the history of their program. How is this possible, Dave, that Northwestern has never been in the NCAA tournament?
I know, it's really kind of hard to believe that they hadn't, but that was the history they were fighting, and now they've changed it. They are going.
I have to be honest with you, I don't follow Northwestern basketball that much, so I thought this was, I just said to you, Bill, this is the first time ever?
Ever.
So congratulations to everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a great accomplishment for them because they've had this thing kind of like the Cubs not having won in 108 years. Or 107 years. They finally got it off their back.
So, Wendy, you weren't listening then, but yesterday afternoon, Dave and everyone was live up at Northwestern for the announcement. And I couldn't stop. It was so much fun.
Pandemonium.
Oh, my. It was just to listen to these guys, the players, and everyone talk and celebrate it. It was just, I almost had tears in my eyes. I was so happy for them.
Well, Steve, thank you. And you wouldn't have been the only one because there were a lot of people shedding tears, including some of the players.
Oh,
including
I believe it.
Chris Collins, when he was talking to the crowd up there yesterday, he's an emotional guy and brought his family up and he got all choked up.
Yeah,
that guy seems like the greatest guy ever, Chris Collins.
He's terrific, and he's done, obviously, a wonderful job there. And look, he was a first-time head coach. Granted, he had a great pedigree, great heritage. I mean, his dad, obviously, has been a very successful coach, and he worked alongside Coach K for all those years. But until you've been a head coach, you don't know whether this guy, I mean, I think they had a pretty good feeling. Jim Phillips, when he hired him up at Northwestern, had a good feeling he was going to be successful. But until you go through it, how do you really know? And he's done a great job.
How much of it is the coaching? How much of it is recruitment? And how much of it is the guy who calls the games on WGN radio?
I'd say it would be 50%, 50%, 0%.
What?
Yes, I know that doesn't make, does that add
that's
up to 100%?
100%, sure.
But, you know, maybe minus 2% for the last one. You know, the coaching and recruitment go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the game. The game is not only coaching the players you have, but getting better players than the ones you, and you're always looking for better players than the ones you have.
Mm-hmm.
And
just like management here.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
The same thing.
And so that's, you have to be able to do that. And I think that that's something that Chris has done very well, starting with his first recruits. And he was talking yesterday about the two guys who are seniors on this team, one of whom is a fifth-year senior, Sanjay
Lumpkin.
He's
my favorite Northwestern player.
He's your
player.
Favorite player. Every day, day I'd come in here after a game, and Bill says, "How's Sanjay Lumpkin doing?"
Yeah.
And he's been great. And he had an opportunity as a fifth-year guy, having graduated from Northwestern, to go transfer and be able to play the next year.
Yeah.
He could have gone anywhere he wanted, and there would have been a lot of programs that would have been glad to have him. But he chose to return to Northwestern for that fifth year.
And there's no way to be a sixth-year player.
Well,
what if you're a horrible student? I would highly recommend any of you college basketball players.
There is a sixth year. There is a sixth year if under a medical hardship situation, but it's not quite that.
No.
It's Tracy Abrams at Illinois.
He did
who,
6 years.
Who was a sixth-year senior?
My brother did 6 years, but he didn't play basketball.
Well, he missed 2 years with injuries. So that's how you're able to get the extra year.
It's
basically a medical hardship type of deal.
Oh,
but Chris,
take that, Bill.
I took it.
Chris was talking. Yeah, your brother. He didn't apply in this case.
Nope.
But Chris was talking about the fact that
in any case, really,
didn't apply himself.
Nope.
Okay, I guess this is really between you and your brother. But Chris was talking about how he had Sanjay Lumpkin played for Bill Carmody, Chris's predecessor, and so that's always a difficult thing when you have a coaching change. And then another senior this year, Nathan Taphorn, a fourth year senior, had committed before they made the coaching change, and then Jim Phillips and Chris Collins went down to Pekin, Illinois, where he was from, and said, "We still want you."
Good.
And he still wanted to come.
Beautiful.
And he's the guy who threw the pass on the that led to the game winner against Michigan a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Someone has texted, "Did you see what Julia Louis-Dreyfus tweeted about Northwestern? Did you talk about this morning?"
We have not talked about
that. She said, "We're going to the dance, boys, NU men's basketball, making history." And then she put a video of her doing the Elaine dance from Seinfeld.
Isn't that
which
nice?
Is pretty awesome.
Yes, we're going to the dance.
Yep.
And she put the Elaine dance.
Yes,
in.
It was pretty great.
Good. She's been... And
very
if you
vocal
watch the
and
game,
supportive.
Well, and her son's on the team. And the other night he got into the game against Rutgers. Anyone who was watching, the ESPN cameras were on her pretty much the whole game. And when he came into the game, they had a split screen with her son, Charlie Hall, who's a sophomore walk-on on the team. And showing him and then showing her reaction as he grabbed two rebounds
late
in the game and the win. It was a pretty cool moment.
I didn't realize he was on the team.
Will there be other celebrities other than Julia Louis-Dreyfus and her husband Brad Hall attending the Northwestern games, do you think?
You?
I don't know. I don't know if you saw.
Who else?
Stephen Colbert.
Was he there?
No, he wasn't there. But CBS, at halftime of the Big Ten championship game yesterday, ran a video that Colbert did from his late show set. Very funny.
Yeah?
Very funny video about Northwestern finally going to the tournament.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
Great.
So, you know, you have the Stephen Colberts, the Seth Meyers. I don't know if any of them are going to make their way out to Salt Lake City for this, but they will certainly be there in spirit.
Well, congratulations to one and all. There have been such
news.
A good team. I'm surprised it took this long to have happen. I mean, you likened them to the Cubs. The Cubs haven't been great for many years.
Well, this has been their best year. This has been their best team. They've had some good teams. They've had some terrific players, but they haven't been able to get it all put together at the same time. And this year they did.
Cubs, Northwestern, Blackhawks, of course, maybe the White Sox and the Bears. This might be our year, Bill. Lots of dead air.
Bill, did the Bears do something in the last 3 minutes that I'm not
sure,
aware
Mike
of?
Sure, Mike Lennon.
Oh, yeah, okay. I forgot about Mike Lennon.
Thank
all right,
you, Dave.
So Thursday
congrats.
Afternoon against Vanderbilt.
And we'll have it right here on WGN Radio at
perfect.
3:05 and then right into Blackhawks hockey after the game.
What a day. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.
A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Medical Watch reporter Dina Baer takes you inside America's killer epidemic, Hijack, the opioid addiction crisis, a special report this week on WGN-TV News at 9. Did you think everybody would be an hour late today?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if your house is like this, but every year I find out that more and more things automatically change the hour on their own. You know what I mean? Like now, my computer changes on its own.
That's always done
my
it.
Car changes on its own.
It does?
My phone changes on its own. And I think I told you last time when it flipped it the other way for daylight savings time, say like whatever, that my clock on our bedstand just changes on its own. I can't figure out how, but at 2 in the morning, it just changes on its own.
You have a modern alarm clock, evidently.
Yeah, I guess so. But like for years and years and years, I lived in a world where whatever room I was in, I would just eventually change the hour. So it was like time zones within my own house.
Well, we had the oven and the microwave to change.
Yeah.
And both Jim and I did it. So we were 2 hours ahead.
Oh, you were? You changed it the wrong way?
No. He did it once, and then I didn't know he did it. So then he looked at the clock, and he goes, oh, my God, it's 1:30? And the kids are like, no, it's 12:30.
Yeah.
So we were, like, ahead of the game for a while, actually.
I'm not a huge fan of the changing back and forth. With the time we're on now, I'd be fine with it if we just kept this all year. But whoever decided to do it on a Saturday into Sunday as opposed to Sunday into Monday, that was a smart move because everybody would be either an hour early or an hour late for work.
The first serious case, the official credit for the idea of daylight saving time goes to a bug collector.
Harvey Klinger from the Brady Bunch.
Close. While working at a post office by day, an entomologist named George Vernon Hudson, who did most of his bug hunting at night, became frustrated by how early the sun set during the summer months. He reasoned that springing the clocks forward would allow more daylight for bug collecting along with other evening activities.
Boy, is he right.
The clocks could be switched back in the winter when people and bugs were less likely to be found outdoors. When the idea was proposed to a scientific society in New Zealand in 1895, it was panned for being pointless and overly complicated. And just two decades later, it spread across the developed world.
So we owe it all to him, to entomologists.
And a postal worker.
And a postal worker.
And can I tell you, it's a health hazard. Even if daylight saving time was good for your energy bill, that wouldn't negate the adverse impact it can have on human health. Numerous studies show that the extra hour of sleep we lose by springing ahead can affect us in dangerous ways. For instance, an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, and susceptibility to illness have all been linked to the time change.
Oh.
Go to bed earlier.
It right. does.
Come on.
There's a quick way to balance it out.
You're right. Still off.
Sleep in for an hour.
Right.
You're still off. I woke up at 5:30 this morning. I don't know. I normally wake up at 6:30.
Yeah. But can't you just can't lay back down and go to sleep for an hour?
What's
then?
The point for an hour?
It's a luscious, you get that hour golden sleep. Hour. I did that this morning. I blew off my health club. I'm like, I've got another hour, 15. Yeah. Woke up four times during that hour, but every time But every right. time I'm like, oh, I got 15 more minutes, 13 more minutes.
That's why I set my alarm so much earlier and just keep hitting snooze, because it's like bonus sleep. It's like I'm cheating the sleep industry.
But it's bad bonus sleep. I'm a snooze hitter, too.
Yeah.
I set three alarms just to make sure I get up.
Yeah.
And it's not quality sleep when you get up and you have one snooze going off and then another one goes off. It's like every 4 to 6 minutes you're awakened.
It's my best sleep of the night. Because I feel like I'm beating the system somehow. I'm sleeping extra. It's like when you find, would you rather find $20 than earn $20? It's like found money to me. And I'm tricking myself because I know that the snooze alarm is coming. Who am I kidding? I'm the one that said it. But I still love it.
Every day that I blow off the snooze and just get up, it's like, I'll show you, snooze bar.
Yeah.
I will get up now. I have the best day because I'm ahead of myself.
Yeah.
It's like that snooze should have never been invented.
It was an entomologist.
It was.
Invented that. Did you know that? I like the attitude of Arizona and Hawaii, who
they
say,
don't participate.
I'm not playing your game.
Are those the only two states?
Yeah. Those
are
the only
Hawaii
two.
Hawaii doesn't need to because it's sunny pretty much all the time, and evidently Arizona the same. Why not Florida? They do it?
Florida does not do it. Florida is on what the rest of us are on. In Indiana... has changed, right? Because for a while, or is their time zone still different? Because remember how parts of Indiana were in one time zone and then across the street it was the other time zone?
Who makes this stuff up? An entomologist?
Always an entomologist.
Or an Entomin Baker.
Combination of the two. All right, we must take a break. And then after the break, we've got Steve Bertrand with news and then all kinds of things coming up on today's show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Charlie Engelman joins us right now. Charlie is one of the hosts and creators of Weird But True, a television show that if you're not watching yet, hopefully you'll pick up on it and start watching. It's just been renewed for its second season.
And Charlie, you fit under the category, one of our favorite categories, local guy made good. You're from Northfield.
Yeah, north of Evanston.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? All right, for people who are not aware of the show, explain what Weird But True is, please.
So Weird But True is a kids' science show that's funded by National Geographic. So we travel around the entire United States and pick a subject like space travel or like survival in Alaska or diving with sharks. And we kind of explain the weird science behind that subject. Mm-hmm. And we explain it all using crafts and costumes and fun skits that we all film in the basement of my parents' house on the north side, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And
no,
I mean,
big old studio somewhere?
You know, we just pop
it's
in
like
the
Wayne's World.
Yeah, you know. Like a couple times we need a dog, and so we brought in my dog Winnie, and she appeared on the show a couple times. My sister, who runs a bakery, we like strung her in. We're like, hey, we need another person. So she kind of just hopped right in there. And, yeah, so that's pretty much it.
So how does something with such humble beginnings, because it does, as Wendy pointed out, it sounds like cable local access, but it's not. It's big time. Mm-hmm. How'd you swing this?
So it all kind of started with a grant that I won from National Geographic. I won a $50,000 grant to produce a web series that I pitched into a show, which was like a 10-minute show. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of the same vibe where it's kind of really homey. It was just me and my friends, and we use kind of crafts to explain things. And it's got such kind of a unique aesthetic and a goofiness and an aura of fun that you don't see on any other really science shows out there. So once Nat Geo saw it, they loved it and picked us up for a kind of a real show, I guess. They wanted us to make a 30-minute one. So I guess it's just, it's really its own unique thing, and there's nothing else like it on television. So it just kind of sparked their interest, I guess.
All right. Was it tough to go from a 10-minute thing to a 30-minute thing? Because all of a sudden it just got real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, like a 10-minute thing, you can think of something like, oh, I'm going to talk about giant sequoias. So we're going to go climb giant sequoias in California, right? And but for 30 minutes, you got to think, like, how do I stretch out this tiny bit for so long? And I've never written a TV show before, so it was a little tough to get started. But
so knowing that, does the network say, well, Charlie's very new at this, we need to send somebody to kind of police him and make sure he's doing this according to the rules? Or did that not happen?
Well, you think that would happen, right? Yeah. And you think, like, I'm 24, so there's no way that I'm going to write a television show and they're going to be like, let's do it. But going into it, I guess they liked it so much. And we worked with a production company out in Philadelphia who had a lot of confidence in me and my sister Kirby, who co-hosts it, her ability to be on camera. So they kind of just let us go for it.
Yeah.
And it's what you get is this show where we're just really like fool around and have fun. And it's kind of like just unfiltered goofiness with some science in there.
Have you always been a fan of science? I love science. And if you can, science is really fun, but it depends how it's taught. Like sometimes elementary school science teachers are not having fun with it, but you are having fun with this and you're quirky. You really can identify any tree from the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
Well, so combine that with loving science and being kind of a quirky dude.
I guess it just works out. I've always been a science communicator, but I've never, as weird as it sounds, I've never really liked watching science documentaries or science television shows, or even, like you said, like falling asleep in science class, because the science communicators out there are not too great. They're kind of inherently boring, so you gotta have fun with it. And the part of science that I love is, as weird as it sounds, like those trees. Like, I'm really into trees because learning about trees, the different types of leaves, the different types of branching patterns, you can walk outside and, like, even looking outside the studio right now, there are a couple trees or bushes out here that have names and there are different things going on science-wise. So just being able to look at the world in a different way is so great to me, and it opens up my eyes.
Of course.
And that's what we try to do in the show, you know, take a subject like a shark or like space and explain all the weird things behind it. Like, you can't burp in space, or you grow 4 centimeters
in
space.
Why can't you burp in space?
I think it's
rude.
It's something with right?
Yeah.
You don't want to be rude in the space station.
What, the air won't come out?
It's got to be something with zero Gs or no gravity or something like that. The gas just kind of collects in your stomach. Oh. So
what about releasing it the other way? Can you do that in space?
I would assume it's the same way.
These are the questions I have,
which is probably good. It'll get clogged up in the
space. How do you think Buzz Aldrin got his name?
Anyway, have you had the urge to call up any of your science teachers and say, Charlie, hey, I got my own science TV show. How are things on your end? Did you even consider that or not?
Oh, I don't. I like to. I've called up a couple of them or shot them an email and be like, hey, thanks for, you know, inspiring me, yeah, and getting me really excited about this stuff. Yeah, because, I mean, that's where it all starts, right? When you're little. And
yeah.
You hear something from a teacher that gets you really amped up, and you want to kind of tell your friend right when you go home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're too young to know this, but there have been television shows that kind of remind me of what you're doing. There was a show on called Make-A-Wish for a while. It wasn't about science, but they would just take a word or a subject and do essentially what you're doing with science.
Uh-huh.
And then In the News was a show on CBS that for a while were explaining big stories to kids in a way that they would appreciate. So even though you're too young to know those shows, there's kind of a lineage that came before yours.
Yeah, it's kind of in the same vein. And people bring up like Bill Nye sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
People bring up Mr. Wizard going like way
Don
back.
Don Herbert.
Yeah, I've never seen it. But
no, you'd love it. It's really good.
It's the same thing, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But that's what, I mean, a lot of science communicators, I think, some of the topics that you talk about when you talk about physics,
mm-hmm,
it's really easy for people who are science geeks to get like really amped out about electrons or something like that. But you got to remember that like kids or non-science enthusiasts are going to get bored to heck if you talk about just these tiny specific things. So
sure.
That's why I try to make it fun and goof around and bring my dog in and stuff like that, you know?
Well, that's going to capture kids' attention more. Mm-hmm. And you're going to inspire young scientists all over the place. You realize that, right? This is a good thing.
That's the goal. I mean, hopefully, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
Is it easy or difficult to work with your sister on a daily basis on a TV show?
It's easy and hard. I'm catching.
No, you're being very careful.
We had to make 17 episodes of this show in 5 months. So it was really, we were rocking like 12, 14 hour days, 7 days a week. So, I mean, when you're working with anybody, you're bound to butt heads. But the greatest thing with me and my sister is if we were on screen at the same time and we had to rehearse a bit or we had to say something, we'll do a take and then we can look at each other and kind of know what change we're going to make, and we didn't even need to communicate.
Oh,
it
that's
was just
perfect.
Like, we can just bust it out. So it was really easy to work with each other, I think.
Charlie Engelman in the studio with us. He's a co-host. He and his sister, Kirby. It's called Weird But True. It's on Fox Saturday mornings and also on National Geographic Kids.
Nat Geo Wild is going to be on this upcoming year.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this isn't your first job. Your first job was you had a button making business.
Yeah,
you are a weird dude.
I like interesting things, I guess.
Explain this: a button making business.
So you know, it wasn't buttons like on a sweater, but you know, like campaign buttons.
Sure.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So I got like I thought it was a good idea in high school to purchase, like, to invest in a button making machine. So I bought one and then set up a booth at a farmer's market, and I had a bunch of magazines. And people can kind of cut out images or pictures in the magazines and make their own homemade buttons. And I thought that was like the idea. Like, no one had done this before, and I was going to make a bunch of money on it.
How'd you do?
It was a good idea, though. Like an instant button?
Yeah, right, an instant button. I made some money. I made enough.
Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands?
Oh, hundreds. I donated a lot of it, so I'm going to keep it. But, I mean, it was just like a fun thing to do for the summer.
And how old were you when you had your own button-making business?
I think I was freshman or sophomore in high school.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
You're your own boss. You're making your own hours.
Yeah, I think so.
That's good.
To do it, I guess.
Somewhat of a musician. What kind of instrument do you play?
My thing, I guess, is I can play a lot of instruments. I can play like one song on an instrument to impress someone.
Yeah.
So if you like pulled out a piano or a guitar or even like a clarinet, I could be like, oh, let me try that. And I could play a song. But then if you asked me to do another, I'd be like, oh, no, just one song is the limit?
No.
Yeah, one song. I like fiddling around with instruments. I play piano and trumpet and guitar. I could fiddle on the harmonica and trombone, too. So I can do a lot of different things.
What about the second heaviest instrument in the world?
Wow, you're going in deep here, I guess. I can play the carillon. Have you guys ever heard of that?
I have heard of it.
The carillon?
Yeah.
What is that?
Do you know the bell tower? Like at churches?
Yes.
So some...
Or in Naperville, they have one, I think, too.
Yeah.
Some you pull with strings, like big rope, but other ones you kind of... There's a keyboard out in front of you that's like a piano, except instead they're kind of dowel rods. And instead of tinkling them with your fingers, you smash them with your fists. So I took a class in college learning how to play the Carillon, which is the bell tower.
And seems violent, Charlie.
It's a great way to like a gentle release person. Some aggression, I guess.
Some people box. Some people play the Carillon.
Yeah. It's actually really nerve-wracking though, because when you're learning, it's like you can't really practice that easily because people hear you in like a 5-mile radius. So if you screw up, you're just like, well, I hope people are just kind of tuning it out.
Charlie Engelman is his name. He's the host, co-host, along with his sister Kirby, and co-creator of Weird But True, a TV series just picked up for the second season. We'll take a quick break and then pick this up in a minute. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder, and our guest is Charlie Engelman. He and his sister co-host a show called Weird But True. If you haven't seen Weird But True, start watching it. I think you'll enjoy it. So much more to ask you, and you shared some strange facts about yourself, but Wendy pointed out we haven't really talked about the strangeness of your sister, and that needs to be done.
Well, they're both quirky, so, right? You'll understand.
Yeah, we're both interesting people.
She went to circus school?
So Kirby is a very passionate person, and she has very interesting interests, I guess. So when she finds something that she likes, she goes into it like 110%. So like, oh, she went and saw the circus, so now she wants to go to circus school and train to be an acrobat. Or she was interested in bees. And so rather than like getting a book on bees and just watching a documentary on bees like a normal person, she decides to contact all of the expert beekeepers in the entire country, research bees for a couple months, and then purchase bees and start collecting and giving out honey, you know?
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of her style, right?
So when you got the show, did you know from day one Kirby's going to be my co-host? Did you audition other people, or how did that play out?
Kirby helped out with the first show that we did, so we won that grant and created that first show for National Geographic. And when Nat Geo saw it, they really liked Kirby. And we did this segment where Kirby climbed a giant sequoia in California, like 300 feet up in the air, and then spent the night in a hammock at the top of it.
And she is crazy, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. She's the real deal. She doesn't mess around. But they liked that one so much that they said, oh, she's got to be on this next one, too.
Are you guys the Donnie and Marie of Strange Science?
The Donnie and Marie? I don't even know.
You don't know who
the Osmonds? Donnie Osmond, Marie Osmond.
I'll say yes. Sure.
All right.
Sorry, Grandpa. The question didn't go over well.
Come on,
Bill. Like a young Kelvin Coolidge.
It's on Fox Saturday mornings, also on Exploration.
Exploration Station is kind of their kids' science block on Saturday mornings on Fox,
And what are some of the episodes that are coming up or some cool ones that you've done that you want to share with us?
Oh, some cool ones that we did are we went diving with sharks off the coast of Florida, where we talked about kind of shark temperaments and that sharks aren't really scared of humans or aren't really there to eat humans. They're kind of just indifferent about us.
But much like if there's pizza near you, you know, you're going to take a piece.
Yeah.
Don't sharks kind of have that kind of attitude a little bit?
Well, this is how it was kind of explained to me, which I think makes sense, is sharks eat fish, right?
Yeah.
We're not like part of their diets. So it's like us seeing something that could be eaten, but is not like, I don't know, like dirt or something like that. Like we're not going to eat that. So we kind of steer clear of it. And it's the same thing with sharks.
Then why do they bite us and eat us?
Usually it's if they're spooked or scared or threatened or something like that. So if we kind of leave them alone, then it's going to be fine.
They say always like, don't flap your feet or panic, but who can not panic if you see a fin right there?
All right. So we dove with sharks off the coast of Florida, and it was fine, and there were 11 bull sharks down there, and it was a great afternoon.
Were you in a cage or not in a cage?
Well, I thought we were going to be in the cage, and then the guy we were with is just like, just get in, go, go, go. So we just kind of jumped off and went for it. And at the beginning, my mask flooded, so I was kind of freaking out, and it was really nerve-wracking, and the scariest moment, there are two scary moments down there. One where a shark was about 10 feet away and going straight at my face. And it was like that Jaws shot where the shark is going right for the camera.
Yeah.
And that was a big freak out moment for me.
What'd you do?
I kind of just froze and it kind of played chicken with me and then darted off to the right. And then the other time is you're supposed to not flap your hands because they might misinterpret them as fish.
Yeah.
You're supposed to keep them really close to your chest. But at one moment, I guess I was getting a little too excited and I was waving my hands around And I got a little snap from like an 8-footer, and that was pretty scary. But I just kind of kept him in close, and for the rest of the dive, it was okay.
Wow. Wow.
I wouldn't even do it in a cage.
Nope.
Once you get down there, they're very, if you try to kind of push it out of your mind, and it really helps that Kirby was down there too, and this was like our job, so we had to get a lot of narration down there, so we just were kind of nervously talking to each other for 20 straight minutes, trying to distract ourselves from the fact that there were 11 sharks swimming around us. So that was definitely one of the more exciting episodes that we filmed.
That's pretty cool. And some of episodes that are upcoming, what do we have to look forward to?
We have a great astronaut episode where we went to Texas and filmed at the Johnson Space Center. You know, and they're like, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, that's the
place.
We
went to Houston. Yeah, we got kicked out of the control room because the lights were shining too bright. But it was fun. We got a couple other stuff down there. And we have a forensics episode coming up, which is fun. We were in our front yard filming, and the Illinois State Police was there. We had a fake crime scene set up, and of course, their television cameras, so our like, neighbors were flocking, think something terrible happened.
Of course.
Yeah, but that's a really exciting one that comes
up. Do you have enough ideas, Charlie, to where if this ran 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you go, that's not a problem, this is limitless. Are you in that situation?
I think so.
Good.
Yeah, because it's just goofing around and so, like the forensics episode, like, what do we want to do? So me and my sister dressed up as cops from Boston at a diner and pretended to talk about some crazy cases that we solved, which were actually real-life cases. You know, we can do stuff like that.
Were you in a Shark Tank for that?
No.
You still weren't in a Shark Tank.
No,
you're
Shark
so
Tank.
Brave.
No cages.
So brave.
Yeah.
Now, a little information we found out off the air. Your mom and your aunt went to Scotland with Steve Bertrand.
Mm-hmm. Steve Bertrand traveled.
Yes. So maybe you could hook up with Steve Bertrand Travel, and he can help send you to these crazy locales to do more for your show, Weird But True.
That sounds like a phenomenal idea. I mean,
you would do it.
He's a super nice guy, right?
He's a very nice guy.
He's all right.
He's explained to us.
He's all right. He's not too bad.
Nope. Well, continued success with this. Weird But True, you can catch it on Fox on Saturday mornings and Exploration Station. And what season number is this that you're...
Just wrapped up season one, and we're hoping to start season two soon.
That's awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Come a long way.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. We're very proud of you. I always like to see guys in the area.
Again, Grandpa, you are really hitting it home. We're very proud of you, Sonny.
We have to take a break because I need to whittle and yell at kids on my lawn. Charlie, thank you so much. We'll take a quick break. News is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right, at noon today, Bill and I will be journeying off into extraterrestrial radio.
Right, and it's dangerous.
And we will be separated from our friend Steve Bertrand, who will be right here on 720 AM hosting the Wintrust Business Lunch. If I may say, someone has texted us, where do I go to find Wendy and Bill at noon? I have a tablet, no computer, and I'm not techno-savvy. Thanks, Marsha in Maryville.
Can I take that one?
Yes.
Just listen to the Business Lunch, and I'll tell you if they do anything significant.
Yes. Steve hoodwinked us.
All right, here's what I'm trying to figure out. You can definitely listen on a tablet, because I have done it on my tablet. You go to WGNradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go there, there's a little, upper left-hand corner. It just says, listen, Bill and Wendy. So you would click on that, and then get it ready, because you can click to listen live, which is what's going on the air right now, or a little about halfway down the page, it says click for bonus coverage when available, and that is WGN Extra.
All right. I have a question, though. It has our names up in the upper left-hand corner now because we're on the air now, but what happens at noon when we're not on the air?
Well, that's what I'm hoping. There will be a listen to Bill and Wendy button and a listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand.
Smaller button.
They haven't really... cleared this up, and if you don't have the app, is really easy. You go to the app and you will see two separate streams, and you just click on WGN Plus. Is that it, Kevin?
Yeah. You can switch. There's a little next to the play button on the app. There's a little like indicator where you can select different streams.
Right. A drop down kind of thing.
And it might just say bonus content for now. I'm not sure. But...
Kevin, how much coaxial cable will the listener need to be able to hear us?
I don't think they'll need any.
None?
Just headphones, maybe.
But here's where it gets confusing, in my opinion, because I'm trying to explain to my husband where to listen, and Jim's kind of a techno guy.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know because it hasn't happened yet. I know people don't want to download the app because they don't want to take up room on their phone. I say get the app because it's just easier.
And free.
It is free, but it does if you don't, like, you don't know how to download apps. And I'm not making fun of you, but there are other people that don't want to really partake in the apps either.
Yeah.
So that's where you go to WGN Radio, and we've been telling people at WGN Plus, but it says WGN Extra.
Oh. Is that dramatically different?
A direct audio feed.
You know what would be easier if for the first couple days, if I crashed into Steve's business lunch and just told people the other option of it, how to do
you
it.
You mean just commandeered it?
Yeah. Is that all right? I'll just
it's
do
not fine with me.
I'll do that today and tomorrow and Wednesday. And
he just nodded. Oh, he's not out there, but we'll act like he just nodded. Like,
is
that's
okay,
fine.
It is okay? Yeah. All right. Then I'll do that.
That's where I'm confused. If you don't have the app, you go to WGNradio.com, mm-hmm. and right now it says listen to Bill and Wendy. You'd click on that and just go there now and do it.
Oh, do it in advance.
Yeah,
that's
and
smart.
Then it, where
You'll
it says WGN Extra, you click on that and that should be us.
All right.
Kevin, you're going to have to start putting the new phone number on our schedule now,
quiz you.
Too.
All right, it's do we know it?
312-235
yes.
2525.
Wendy, way to go. Gold star.
That's excellent.
Thank you. So that's how you call us. So call us because I would like to talk to the listeners, and I hope you're cool with that too, because I want to know if anybody's listening.
Yeah, I would love that.
So 312-235-2525. I've been here over 3 years. I still don't remember the real number.
And
but
now
for
this.
Some reason, I remember this.
Yeah. All right. Well, because it has a very futuristic sound to it.
In the year 2525.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Zager and Evans.
They gave us Zager and Evans' old phone number.
312-235-2525.
And sing that while you're dialing it. It's much more fun.
I'm going to make a little jingle. I'm going to start doing audio production.
Do extra work. Yeah, some jingle work. That's fun.
Well, I don't know how else we're going to fill the time.
Right. I know.
But that. So we'll be at this on the stream at noon.
Starting today.
Yep. Hopefully it'll last the week. Other yeah. people have not done so well on the stream.
I know.
But in our defense,
yes.
we still have this portion of it on the radio.
Yeah, that's true,
the
too.
The other people did not.
They did not.
They so were just moved to the stream. Now, if all of our hours are on the stream, Bill, let's pack our office up.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but all those other WGN personalities that moved to the stream are still in that room upstairs.
Oh, no.
So they'll be on. I hope they'll come on with us.
Yeah, baby.
Some familiar faces will be up there.
I just had a caller concerned about the stream taking up data.
Does it do that?
Well, what I told her was if you're on Wi-Fi at your building, you won't be using any data. It'll be streaming free of charge. Otherwise, it's just audio stream. It's not going to use up much data at all.
All right.
Just audio.
I can't speak for you, but I'll try to say things on the stream that do not take up a lot of data. I'll make a conscious effort when I'm saying something to go, oh, I'm not going to say that. That'll use up a way big load of data. I'll keep thinking about that during the show.
Just be on Wi-Fi. You're fine. That's not a big deal.
All right.
All right. Well, that's good to know if you're on Wi-Fi. And honestly, most places have Wi-Fi because my iPad, is it an iPad? Yeah. Jim and the boys bought me that for Christmas
yeah.
a couple years ago. And it does not have... like, you can't use it like an iPhone, so you have to be somewhere where there's Wi-Fi in order to get online.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, everywhere. Starbucks, Corner Bakery,
that's
Walgreens,
true, right? You can't
anywhere.
Go anyplace without it having... where was I? I was
a doctor's appointment. They tell you right there. You
they have
the
it.
Guest, and here's the password.
Yeah, all
it's
right,
everywhere.
Good. All right.
So
you should be able to listen almost everywhere.
If you don't have Wi-Fi and you know your neighbor does, put on a nice warm coat... and go sit right by the side of their house.
Yeah,
and
they won't mind.
Glom onto their Wi-Fi.
They're not going to mind.
No, they won't.
It'll be fine.
All right, well, we'll figure all that out. I think we know, we don't know what we're doing today. It'll be a surprise
well,
to
I
us.
I like your suggestion of we'll spend some time with the listeners finding out who's who and what's what, who's listening. Because this is all very new, uncharted territory for both of us, for everybody.
Someone else wants to know, will that be the text number as well? Evidently not.
Oh, it isn't? All right.
Not for now.
All right.
312-235-2525. But we would like to talk to you directly.
Yeah.
We will have more time because we don't really know what to do. Will you tack on the extra hour to the podcast? Kevin works very hard to make sure our full shows are on the internet and some of the interviews are separated.
Right.
But you can always listen to the whole show at WGNradio.com. And this will be the bonus hour, just labeled the bonus hour.
Right. It'll be separate content altogether. So it will definitely be posted as a podcast, but just separate from the full show. It'll be the WGN or the Bill and Wendy bonus hours, whatever we're calling it. Now I'm mixing up my words.
Oops, my bonus. We made a bonus.
Yeah, it's words to that effect.
You should call it the bonus lunch and tick off Bertrand.
Oh, yeah.
I think we already have.
The Wintrust Business Bonus Lunch. Let's call it that.
Good idea, Ryan. Don't you guys give out money then?
Yeah.
I think you do, yeah.
I think we would have to.
All right, careful, guys. I know it's the stream.
We didn't say how much.
All right, that's true. I think I have a single on me today. I usually don't have money. You have your $20 allowance.
I have not spent any of my 20 yet, so anything could happen today.
Well, this is what a lot of people might do. They might feel the need to listen to Steve Bertrand since he's on their radio.
Right.
And then they can listen to us later.
That's fine.
I don't know. I'd like to invite everyone to come join us. Does that mean?
No. I don't think it's mean at all.
I bet Bertrand's going to be listening to us.
I notice he's dressed a lot more provocatively today. I wonder if that's try to win over listeners on the fence.
That's how he rolls.
Yeah, I wonder. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more confusion. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on regular terrestrial radio now, but switching over at noon for the bonus hour.
On extraterrestrial radio.
Right. So please listen in. We would enjoy that. You know, a little while ago on the show, we had a guest. This is earlier today, Charlie Engelman. Charlie is the creator and co-host of a show called Weird But True. It's right there on your TV sets. And just during our conversation, I referred to Charlie and his sister, Kirby, as the Donnie and Marie of science. And he kind of had a quizzical look on his face. Charlie is, and I'm not blaming him for this. There's no reason to blame him. Wendy, you are, but...
He's 24.
24.
He's got a TV show. He doesn't have internet to Google around. You don't hear ever of Donnie and Marie, and I really don't care that much, but I'm just surprised.
Today's kids are afraid of Donnie and Marie. They're frightened of them.
Why? So, their teeth too big?
I think it's something about their movie Goin' Coconuts. It just scares kids. I can't explain why. So both you and I were a little surprised that he had not heard of Donnie and Marie because they're kind of American icons, but it coincides with something Rolling Stone has just put out. It's a bunch of things that they say millennials have never heard of. Now, I'm usually one to quickly defend a millennial saying, well, it's not their fault. If they weren't born for something, how could you possibly know about it? But then you've pointed this out in the past. There's a bunch of stuff that you and I, and I think most people know about that preceded us. But if you hear something and you're curious about it, now there's all sorts of technology on your phone or your computer. You can just look it up really quickly and find out the history.
Open up the Googler.
Open the Googler.
And then you can find out what it is. I'll bet you that our last guest, Charlie Engelman, Googled Donnie and Marie on his way out.
I hope he did, because he's missing a whole world of entertainment.
He's not missing that much, quite honestly.
About Donnie and Marie. Kevin, would you mind if I ran a couple of these past you and you'll see. Now, you're 30, so you have no excuse
at all. I'm on the
older
end of the spectrum when it comes to millennials.
Right. Doesn't that hurt when you say that?
I'm no longer in my 20s. Yeah, I can't even use that.
Sorry,
mid to late 20s.
Yep. Let me run a couple of these past you, Kevin, and see if you have any idea. Wendy, I know you'll know all of these.
Well, be prepared to be impressed, Bill.
All right, I'm ready.
Kevin is pretty worldly.
I know he is.
For the most part, but I just love when all of a sudden you'll... Like Jimmy Durante came up and you're like, ha cha cha or whatever, and he just laughed, and then you're like, did you know who that? No.
The answer is no. That's right.
Yeah.
But at least you laugh, and hopefully we won't ask you, do you know who that is?
I know. I try to fly under the radar. You guys are starting to figure me out, I think.
I'm going to mix these up, Kev, because I think you'll get some, but I think you won't get others.
Okay.
Tell everybody who Nelson is. Who's Nelson?
Nelson?
Yeah.
He invented the half Nelson.
No. Not even close. No, not that Nelson.
Well, that's too general.
Nelson was...
In what context?
It was a band
they wrote,
made up of...
Okay.
Nelson and Nelson, the Nelson brothers, and they wrote Cotton Eye Joe.
What?
I don't know.
The Nelson brothers love me.
Was this Gunner and...
Matthew. They are the sons of Ricky Nelson, who is, of course, the son of who, Kev?
Jimmy.
Jimmy Nelson is not a real person. Well, there is a real person, but no. He's the son of Ozzy and Harriet Nelson. Do you know who that is?
Are you just making up this family tree as you go?
No. You don't know who Ricky Nelson is?
No.
He was a musician.
He went to a garden party to reminisce with some old friends.
That's a great song.
It's the best garden party song ever written.
Only garden it's the only party garden song ever written.
Ever written.
That was now he died in a plane crash, correct?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so Nelson, the band Nelson, Gunnar and Matthew Nelson, are the sons of Ricky Nelson, who, as we pointed out, is one of the sons, along with David Nelson, of course, of Ozzy and Harriet Nelson.
Can I just tell you, though, it's not fair that you ask Kevin this, because they were gorgeous. So a woman would know that. A girl
all right,
would
Kevin,
know that.
I'm sorry.
Musically, I don't think they really...
No?
They had a hit. What was it? I don't even remember.
I don't remember it.
Okay, so I should get
they're just good looking. I mean, really, that's the only reason. And it was so
hits,
vague.
After the Rain and Can't Live Without You.
That sounds like two hits that came out in the 80s or something.
Actually, that song, Can't Live Without You, is actually a really good song.
Look that up. See Can't Live Without You from Nelson.
1990. It was number one in the U.S.
It was good. Ryan, am I making that up? It's actually a pretty good song, right?
It is, and they both had really awesome long hair.
Great
that's
hair.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
They were better tremendous looking than hair. They were musicians. That's why I think a girl would know them more than their music. Let's give a little listen to, what is this called?
Can't Live Without You from Nelson.
Oh, I like this song. I hate to admit.
This is Can't Live Without You?
Yeah. It's the preamble.
Isn't it called There She Goes?
I've got Can't Live Without Your in parentheses.
Love and Affection.
Love and Affection, yeah.
Oh, I remember
it'll kick in more. They'll get to the title soon.
Like I said, they were better looking than their music. I mean,
this isn't bad,
but...
This is a hit song, huh?
Oh, I remember this now.
And this is when, like, they'd both shake their heads and their hair would just go in all directions.
Never date a guy with better hair than you. That's always been my motto.
That is solid advice.
So they were basically hair that got famous for making songs also.
Kevin, don't cheapen it. Please don't cheapen
Kevin
Nelson.
Kevin doesn't understand monster ballads.
I don't think you do, Kevin. Ryan, you're right. Good call.
I was 10, so.
Oh, my God. We are old. We're old and we're on the stream.
Yeah. Just like you knew what happened.
Usually
that fortune teller was right.
No, I thought when you're old, you lose your stream, and that's why you have to wear Depends.
Don't. Kevin, who is Leisure Suit Larry?
Was that a video game?
Yes.
Yeah, I do know that
I
one.
Didn't know that.
That's a computer game. It was one of the first of the more risque video games that came out. It was one of the first ones. It was a guy, Leisure Suit Larry, and his goal was to score with women, hit on women. And
I remember, there was like a game, too, where you could play quarters with him.
Yeah.
All right, can I just tell you, I have never heard of that in my life, and
Leisure
I play
Suit
video
Larry,
games.
Really?
Never heard of him.
That was pretty popular. Do we have time for one more? We don't. You know what we'll do? We'll talk to Eric Zorn, and then we'll continue this on the stream, as the kids like to say.
Are you teasing the stream?
Yeah, I'm teasing
bonus.
The stream. Right,
that
that's why it's the bonus
hour.
That's why it's called that.
Somebody just said that the Bill and Wendy bonus hour sounds like it would make a great variety show.
It would.
A 70s variety show. The Bill and Wendy bonus hour sounds like an awesome 70s variety show.
Yeah.
Well, we'll make
we could
it
have
there.
Barbie Benton on and the guy who played Grady on Sanford and Son.
Get Kessler to bring his harmonica.
Yeah. Now we're talking. All right. That'll be fun. News is next. Ryan will give you the news, and then we'll check in with Eric Zorn. So stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
You know, this is our first show and our new hours, our new time slot. John Williams will be coming in this afternoon from 1 to 3.
Right.
And here we are, Eric.
You're not worried, are you? Eric's here. Hi, Eric. Nice to see you. Welcome aboard.
I'm here.
Thanks for coming.
No problem.
I was Wendy's trying to guilt you.
You know
but
what?
I know you. You can't be guilted.
I was printing out some stuff for this episode. I was rehearsing.
Did you rehearse for today's episode?
Yeah, I always rehearse.
It's very, very nice.
For hours I'm in rehearsal.
I know one of the things you wanted to discuss was there have been some strange quotes, political quotes of late.
I have a whole bunch of them here. Stuff Republicans say. This is just an amazing list.
Do you need to catch your breath?
No, I'm fine. I came down the stairs. If I'd come up the stairs, I'd be panting. Joe Walsh, the former Republican congressman, now is a show on a competing station.
Seems to be pretty level-headed, doesn't he?
He said the other day, I'll just say it, Sandy Hook parents, your 15 minutes is up.
Oh, no. Did he really?
He did.
What prompted that?
Where did he say this?
Prompted was that they're trying to resurrect their lawsuit against Remington, against the gun manufacturer. Your 15 minutes are up, Joe Walsh.
Yeah, stop trying to steal the spotlight.
Also from the Republican delegation, Illinois Rep. John Shimkus, he's actually in office now. He's complaining about, what about men having to purchase prenatal care? Is that correct? Should they have to purchase prenatal care? This is part of the...
I saw this quotation.
Yeah, Neil Steinberg did a really good column about it. He just basically said, well, why should I be forced to pay for a highway if I don't drive, or a library if I don't read books, or an army if I'm a pacifist?
Yeah.
And, of course, the answer to that is that we're all in this together. And every male child out there was, of course, at one point, the beneficiary of, I hope, good prenatal care.
Well, then why do women have to pay for prostate stuff?
Or Viagra.
Yeah.
Pay through the nose for Viagra.
Well, not through the nose. I think you're taking it wrong.
Never mind.
That's an interesting shade of red you're turning, Eric, by the way.
There's so many of these that we have to go through them rather quickly. I hope it's all right. I know you.
Absolutely.
I know you prefer leisurely conversation.
You're fine. You're fine. What's the next one?
Rep. Roger Marshall. He's a Republican from Kansas. He's a member of the GOP Doctors Caucus. And he says, there's a group of people that just don't want health care and aren't going to take care of themselves. He added that morally, spiritually, socially, the poor, including the homeless, just don't want health care.
Well, everyone wants health care. It's a matter of whether or not you can afford health care.
Exactly. This is why this is completely tone deaf.
If you have something horrible happen to you, who would want to go into a hospital knowing you have no funds?
Exactly. And the thing about quotes like this, sentiment out there like this, is that there's so much happening. There's so many things that I have here on my list that I was preparing that there's no time to pause and be outraged about this, to realize that the idea, everybody wants to be able to see a doctor when they're sick, to get the operation that they need when they need it, to have good care at the end of life. Everybody wants it. It's like saying, hungry people, they don't really want to eat.
Right.
I mean, it is so absurd, but it gets to the heart of this healthcare debate, which is healthcare something that we should consider a luxury or a privilege to have healthcare? It's my view that it is not. That it's something that
everybody should be entitled to.
Everybody should be entitled to a basic level of health care.
You would think.
The same way that we educate children, that it is part of our shared responsibility as a society to provide a basic level of access to people, to doctors and to medicine. And the idea that there are people out there who don't want it, this is, of course, how they're going to frame the inevitable loss of care. People are going to lose their health insurance policies, and they're going to be framing this, and you saw it in yesterday's Sunday chat shows, as a choice. Like, you've chosen not to have insurance. The only reason that you would choose not to have insurance is because you can't afford it.
Right.
You don't have the money, because it is expensive. Even if you're a healthy male in his 20s, which is about as good as it gets for insurance, you look at the curves.
Yeah.
When you were in your 20s, how many times I assume you're fairly healthy in your 20s. I probably went to the doctor
once every 5 years, maybe 10 years.
Couple of years or something like that, because I felt like I had to.
Yeah.
But it's like you're at an age where you feel kind of invincible, and you kind of are, unless you do something stupid, you're fine.
You know?
I mean, it's a really good. So people like that, they think they don't need it maybe, but they all want to be able to see a doctor, go to the hospital when something goes wrong and not be bankrupted by it.
With this quote about not everybody wants health care, did anyone call him out on this?
I don't know. He was on. When did he say this? It was in a political article.
Because I don't know how you make a decent argument supporting that statement that not everybody wants health care.
Well, because you say it's not a priority for them. Which you might say not everybody wants an HDTV, which would be true. Not everybody wants a smartphone. That would be true. But you're putting it into this basket of privileges, of things that you would just
of
have,
extras,
extras, an option. Like, I'd like to have that, but I don't really need it.
I can live without it.
Yes, but the truth is, there are people who don't want to pay for luxurious healthcare plans. But this gets into you know, the idea that we have to care for each yeah. other when this kind of stuff happens. Yeah. There are more.
Give us more.
There are more. President Trump's budget director, Mick Mulvaney, told CNN's Jake Tapper on Sunday that the Obama administration had been manipulating the jobs numbers to make unemployment look smaller than it actually was.
We've heard that before, and that's
well,
not...
we've heard it before, but the problem is that now, and this actually dovetails into what Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady said, the Republican chairman. A year ago, the U.S. Department of Labor issued its monthly report showing the economy added 242,000 jobs in February, and he issued a statement saying, well, it's disappointing to see how little growth there is in the economy. Well, on Friday... with Trump now president, the Department of Labor issued its monthly report showing the economy added 235,000 jobs, basically the same number. I mean, this is an estimate, so same amount. And he issued a statement saying, this is a great report. Hundreds of thousands of people have found new jobs. It's a good sign our economy is moving in the right direction. Same numbers, just a completely partisan response to that. Same thing with Mulvaney and his response to the numbers. Sean Spicer then was asked about this, and they said, well, come on, you know what? You said Trump spent his whole campaign saying these numbers are phony, and now what? And he goes, he says, well, they may have been phony in the past, but they're very real now.
And then they laughed, as if to say,
we're all in on the joke.
Yeah,
we're all in on the joke that this is all about just partisan spin.
Yeah.
So it's just this constant hypocrisy that's so – and I'm not saying that Republicans are the only ones guilty of it, but they're particularly guilty of it right now. This idea that – and it was a pretty good jobs report. It wasn't great.
It was way better than expected.
It was better than expected by, yeah. by 20-30%, something like that.
Yeah.
But again, this is all expectations. We've seen something like 77 straight months of job growth in this country since the depths of the recession that happened.
So it was heading in this direction, but is anybody truly believing that just the mere fact that Donald Trump has been in office for a month created all those jobs?
Well, he believes it. The thing is that you have to say when it comes to presidencies and jobs numbers and so on, you know, they don't have their hands on all the knobs necessarily, but... You have to give Trump credit for not...
Bill Clinton had his hands on all the knobs, Eric. I take exception to that.
Back to that conversation, Jerry. Wow. God, he can't let that go. But the truth is it was a good jobs report.
Right.
It reflects that Trump has not crashed the economy. And I've got to say that I have to admit that on the night of the election, when news was coming out that Trump was going to be elected, the stock market started to dive. And I was getting phone calls and texts and emails from friends going, what's going on here? This is like our retirement, everything like that. And so we were all panicked. The stock market not only recovered, it's higher than it's ever
been.
Beat
a record.
And Trump, if Trump had been a disaster for the economy already, the way people were worried that he was, then you would not have seen all this job growth. So, he can take some credit for it, as Obama took credit for this rather steady increase in the number of jobs.
The protest sign industry has never been better than it is right now.
it's really
creating more jobs.
Count all of them. It is creating more jobs. All right, hold that thought.
I have a few more.
We would love to hear more.
Can I do it right now?
No, wait, Eric. Be patient. Please be patient.
Wait, there's more.
Eric Zorn is here. He's got some crazy political quotes. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune is here sharing with us some peculiar political quotes that have all been said within the last couple of weeks, huh?
Stuff Republicans say is how I'm billing this segment. We could have it be like a daily thing if you want.
I bet some Democrats have said some outrageous things, too, to be fair.
Maybe at some point. No, you're right. But and normally these things kind of go fly by me, but I was kind of thinking yesterday, what would we talk about with Bill and Wendy? And I said, God, there have been so many. I thought, well, maybe with this quote, maybe this. And I said, why don't I put them all
together in one
thing, and we'll talk really fast and get them all done. But a couple more that came to mind. Paul Ryan was on Face the Nation yesterday with John Dickerson, and he was asked how many people are going to lose coverage under the new, people who have coverage now are going to lose it. And his answer was, I can't answer that question. It's up to people.
Oh.
And what he's doing is he's framing this again as a choice that people are going to make. Like, well, we're going to take away all the Obamacare supports or most of the Obamacare supports. And we're going to offer you this hodgepodge that we hope of policies that are more suitable to your needs. And then it's going to be up to you whether you buy them or not. Which is a question of, it's up to you whether you're, you know, whether you're rich enough to buy these policies. It frames this issue as like, well, this is just something you might want to buy. Like, do you want the HD TV? Do you want the 60-inch or the 40? Yeah. It's up to you. It's up to you what size.
It's up to people.
It's up to people.
Can I ask a question, though? Am I wrong in saying that President Donald Trump told us that he was going to get better health care coverage for all of us for way less money?
There's some wonderful videos online about that, where they compile all the quotes that Trump said during the campaign. I'm going to have insurance for everybody. Everybody's going to be covered. They're going to pay less.
Way less. It's going to be a better thing. Choices.
More choices. You know, he promised people the world. And he's essentially, you know, snake oil salesman is basically what it was.
So he's not delivering on
that. Well, this particular plan does not deliver on that. This particular plan is going to throw millions of people off the coverage that they now have. It's going to boost premiums on people, especially older people, which is interesting because so many older working class people voted for him because they really wanted, you know, they were chafing at things that were going on. But there have been studies about the people who are especially in their late 50s, early 60s, you know, just pre-Medicare, whose premiums are going to go way up and the subsidies they get are going to go way down. It's going to cost them, you know, in some ways half of their salary just to get coverage. And so, I mean, my answer, I've come around to this belief that we really ought to expand the Medicare program, just have everybody covered by basic Medicare. The taxes would go way up to pay for it, but the amount of money that we would save as workers, as people who have been paying into the private insurance company all these years, the amount of money we'd save, I think, would dwarf the tax increases. But
so when something like that is said, when President Trump, pre-President Trump at that point, gets up there and says, everyone's going to have health care and it's going to cost you less, that's impossible. How did anyone think that was possible? Because somebody has to pay for that.
Well,
and that somebody is the people. The
only
that Paul
way
Ryan
it's possible, Bill. The only way it's really possible is that if you did have like a Medicare for all system, it would cost less, especially if they were to take.
It would cost less at the time, but then taxes
would definitely go up. But right. But in terms of what it costs you out of your pocket, how much money you are paying now in your benefits, and if you look at your paycheck, how much money is coming out of that for your health care?
Yeah.
For most people, you would come out net
even,
you'd come out ahead. No, because it's much more efficient. Essentially, what insurance companies do is they hold this money and they pass it on. There's a complete middleman.
Yeah.
They're not providing any service. One time was talking about what kind of care to insurance companies providing. Insurance companies don't provide any service. They are a pass-through,
right.
And they pay their CEOs and they pay for their marketing, you know, lots and lots and lots of money that's coming out of patients' pockets. If you get rid of that, or you make it so that insurance is just for elective kind of surgeries or for, you know, for sort of premium kind of care situations, you would save a lot of money. And that's why just about every country in the first world has a system like that, you know, single payer, Medicare for all, whatever you want to call it. People like to, you know, say socialized medicine, but that would be, you know, the way that you would fulfill Donald Trump's promise. I did a column on this a couple months ago saying Donald Trump is like laying the groundwork for single payer, for, you know, care for all. He's saying everyone gets
on
covered,
purpose?
It's lower. No, I don't
not
think on purpose.
Purpose
at all. In fact, he'll say like this, and he'll say, well, I'm not talking about single payer, but that's the only way that you can do this. The only way that you can save people money and expand care is to turn it into a Medicare for all program. So, you know, that would be nice. Do we have time for any more here?
Yeah, give us one more.
Okay, well, this is, okay, which one should I choose here? Well, let's look at Rep Steve King. Steve King from Iowa, he made comments over the weekend in which he talked about, he said, we can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. He was asked by CNN's Chris Cuomo. And he says, he was asked to clarify this. He says, you can't rebuild your civilization with somebody else's babies. You've got to keep your birth rate up. And I think he's talking about white people here. You need to teach your children your values. He's talking about if you go down the road a few generations, with intermarriage, I'd like to see an America that is just so homogeneous that we look a lot the same. And this is, let's just parroting some of the right-wing nationalist rhetoric from Europe right now, which is this idea that immigrant populations, and you know, that it's us and the other. When you're talking about other people's babies, you're talking about, you know, Chinese American babies. You're talking about Hispanic, you know, Mexican Americans. Talking about, I read a little bit as African American too. I mean, I'm reading this as a real very insensitive, dubious kind of statement that he said. And he wouldn't back down on it. He just basically says that you know, Western civilization is this is basically white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Certainly is the implication of that quote. And he didn't really try to clarify that when he backed down on it. So it was another example of stuff that Republicans say. So.
What's his goal in this? I'm curious as to what he's hoping to accomplish.
Well, he's got a very, very heavily white district in Iowa, and he's a very conservative Republican lawmaker. And I'm sure his base eats this up. There are a lot of people who think that the problem with our country is that we are too much of a melting pot. But I do think that, you know, obviously in terms of, you know, the historical examples is that one of the things that makes us so strong and such a great place is that we have brought people in from all over the world, and they've made incredible contributions to what we have. And so the idea that we can't make our country better with other people's babies is offensive and wrong. So.
If people want to hear, and I hope they do, if people want to hear the rest of the list of political quotes they want to go to?
Well, they can go to chicagotribune.com/Zorn. I'll probably be writing these up because I know—
You need to.
I would have to put them all together. Is that the Steve Bertrand?
That is a Steve Bertrand.
It's a Steve Bertrand.
One of many that we keep here on staff. Yes. Steve will be by. Thank you, Eric. Eric Zorn of the Tribune. Steve will be by to tell you what he has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.